Hi, I'm Juliet from New York Times Games, and I'm here talking to fans about our games. You play New York Times Games?
Yes, every day.
There's this little tab down here called Friends, so you could add your friend.
That feels new to me.
It is.
It's nice to have the social aspect.
Oh my god, and you have all that times. That's crazy.
Right? You can look at Spelling Bee, Wordle, Connections.
Oh my god, amazing. Love that. I'll have to get the app.
New York Times Games subscribers can now add friends in the Friends tab. Find out more at nytimes.com/games.
This is our seventh Taylor Swift album together.
Is it?
As colleagues.
Seven as colleagues? That's wild.
So here we are.
You're old.
And she just never stopped putting out music. I just want you.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast. You're everyone's so punk on the internet of music, news, and criticism. I'm John Caramonica. I'm the critic.
I'm Joe Coscarelli, and I am the reporter.
Taylor Swift's new album, The Life of a Showgirl, is out. It's out, like, literally right now.
Now.
This is as close to an emergency as Popcast has. We're here doing an instant reaction. My review is out. Your listening has happened. And we're going to get into an album that, dare I say, is maybe slightly misadvertised.
Okay.
I feel like... this is an album that was rolled out on New Heights. This is the Kelce Brothers podcast, Taylor's fiance, Travis Kelce. And you're thinking, oh, this is a love album. She's engaged. There's the rock, the whole thing. It's not exactly that. So we're going to talk about which parts of the album seem to be on brand for that part of the rollout. We're also going to talk about which parts of the album are very, very clearly focused in other directions.
At other humans.
At other people, not people who Taylor wishes to spend the rest of her life with. I did give this album a critic's pick. I think
in
it's
the newspaper.
In the newspaper. We are Popcast. We are part of the New York Times. You should subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/podcast. Hit subscribe for more interviews, more reactions like this.
You should also subscribe to the New York Times.
Yes, Popcast is connected to the New York Times.
It's a newspaper.
It's a newspaper.
With a website.
Yes.
And an app.
A news gathering organization, which pays our salary. In the newspaper, I gave The Life of Showgirl a critic's pick. I will say I would not have given a critic's pick to the last two Taylor albums. I did not review Tortured Poets. I did review Midnights, I think. Neither critic's pick. People know where I stand on the folklore, Evermore, Dyad.
The wrong place. You stand in the wrong place.
I stand in the light of truth. That light and this light, both basking in it. To me, this feels like a comeback. It's made with Max Martin and Shellback. These are two reliable hitmakers for loads and loads of pop stars.
Swedish super producer.
Super producer.
Max Martin is the modern super producer. This is Backstreet Boys, Max Martin. This is Britney Spears, Max Martin. Mm-hmm. This is Katy Perry, Max Martin. Mm-hmm. And this is notably Taylor Swift, Max Martin.
I knew you were trouble.
We are never, ever getting back together.
Yep.
The big pop turns on Red, followed by 1989, mm-hmm. the pure Taylor pop project, which Max was helming most of, a little bit of Jack Antonoff in there. And then Reputation also split between Jack and Max, along with some other producers. And then Taylor was off in what she called her esoteric era.
Not the esoteric era I'd hoped for personally, but it was esoteric.
And Folklore, Evermore, Midnights, Poets was a time and a place. She is now, according to her on the New Heights podcast, taking what she learned there about storytelling, about varied instrumentation, acoustics, not only, you know, big pop synths, not only country music, acoustic guitar, but different textures, but specifically different lyric writing. And
different textures. Yeah, okay.
And as she said, Max said, I love what you did there with your storytelling. I don't want to lose that.
Can I just tighten it up a little?
Yeah, let me just put it in this box.
Shout out Max, because Max probably felt about Folklore the way I felt about Folklore. I probably didn't say it straight to Taylor's face.
But he was like, he just felt the urge to tighten. Yeah. What Max Martin does is he tightens.
My top line read, the first listen through this album was Folklore, Evermore, songwriting in a much cleaner package. And notably for a Max Martin Shellback production, not up at 11.
Not that shiny.
Not super glossy. I would say tight, but not like super pulled back, not fully Botoxed. Tight, though. And it's taking those lessons, I think Taylor's correct, taking those lessons, those songwriting styles, and then Max and Shellback saying, great, we know just the box for those.
Yes. And when you say that the album was maybe misadvertised or that there was a little bit of a head fake, I think that's because when people heard Taylor and Max Martin together, they go to Shake It Off. They go to Style.
Yes.
They go to Blank Space, the big hits from 1989. Banger, banger, banger. And those songs are sparkly and huge. And there are some sparkly and huge songs. We heard Wishlist coming in. Yep. That is vintage
classic
Taylor, Max Martin together. But the Max Martin of this album is a bit subtler, a bit in Taylor's image. And yet, I agree. On my first listen, I thought, okay, she's coloring inside the lines. Mm-hmm. This is taut. The rhymes rhyme. The sentences end where they're supposed to end. Okay. The storytelling is economical. There are details, which has always been Taylor's strength, that actually I think she lost a little bit when she first started working with Max, but she had both before and after him.
Right.
A lot of details on this album, but everything is in its right place, and it sounds expensive, if not totally glossy.
You know, to me, a lot of the older Max and Taylor work are kind of like the gloss inwards, the scale inwards. They're big songs. They call attention to the hooks. And what's happening maybe like line for line in the verses is less important and less meaningful. But these songs don't feel like that. These feel like written Taylor songs. That's why I feel like they're nodding to the Folklore Evermore. These feel like written Taylor songs. Then Max and Shellback are kind of building a house around. And that to me is maybe the best version of their kinds of collaborations. I think what Taylor is saying in a way is, I don't want that hugeness. I not that she's rejecting it out of hand, but for this purpose, she doesn't want to go there. She doesn't want to have these songs maybe even run away with it. Like maybe she wants them that's going to have a little bit more of a controlled and contained rollout. She's coming off of Eras Tour. This is 20 or 21 months of stadium shows across
149 dates.
149 dates.
That's such a huge number. Dwarfed only by the number of songs that Taylor Swift has released since the pandemic, which is now over 200.
I thought you were going to say dwarfed only by the number of episodes Popcast has made about Taylor Swift.
That too.
So we were talking to our editor, Karen, and Karen pointed something out, which is that we are at the end of Eras Tour. We are at the end of Taylor's repurchasing her masters. We are also at the end of Taylor as sort of a single celebrity. This album to me felt like a capstone for maybe Taylor's young adulthood. And you feel that tension between what I would say the two impulses here are. One is looking forward and saying, I'm in love. We're going to live a life together. Maybe it'll be out of the spotlight. Maybe there'll be some randy things happening.
At least at first.
But then there's also part of the album that's like, I've got some scores to settle. There's just a few things I need to say before I go run off with Trav
before
here.
We have kids that hopefully look like you and a picket fence and all the things she's talking about on Wishlist.
There's ops.
Yeah, let me just settle these scores once and for all.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about what the album is about. But before we move on from what it sounds like in the broadest sense, I do think you hit on something by talking about her coming off of the Eras Tour.
Yep.
And also this was made during the European leg of the Eras Tour. She explained she was sort of stealing off to Sweden, homeland of the Max Martin, in between dates of the European leg earlier this year.
Do you know what Shellback looks like?
I don't, which is
like
so cool.
If Shellback was in the room with us right now, would you be able to know?
No, which is so cool. I mean,
shout out Shellback. Yeah. Like, honestly.
Best life, I assume. You're doing it right.
Can we hang out?
You're doing it mad Swedish.
Yeah, Shellback, if you want to come on the show, we would love to have you.
I liked that on New Heights, Taylor was talking about how when she and Shellback were first working with Max together, they were both really young and they both were like still learning from him. And now they've all sort of come back together at different stages in their lives and careers. So I think that's cool. But yes, so she's making this about the Eras Tour. And I think, and you wrote about this in your review a little bit, I do think she was taking some of the spirit of the Eras Tour. there are different eras within this 100%. Album. There are callbacks to Red. There are callbacks to 1989. Fearless. There's a callback to Fearless, Ruin the Friendship, which we'll get to. There are songs here that sound and are in dialogue with previous eras of Taylor Swift.
Did those feel like exclamation points to you? Because I think on my first listen, I was like, is this chaotic? And on my third or fifth listen, I was like, maybe this isn't chaotic. This is, in essence, a microhistory.
Yeah, it's an arc, much like the Eras Tour is an arc, because I do think that show could feel chaotic when you have the spooky Evermore segment and then you have the ecstatic Midnight segment when she's closing with Karma. You know, it's like it is all over the place in that sense. But I feel like there's enough through line here. And also, to be clear, she, Shellback, and Max Martin are the only writers and producers on this album. So it is
like George Michael.
and the ghost of George Michael. So it is in Father Figure, which we will talk about. Yeah. But it is cohesive in that sense. And I think it is eclectic, if not chaotic.
Yeah.
And I do like the fact that, you know, she had sort of teased this as, I want to make an album that I'm as proud of as the Eras Tour and for the same reasons. And Max said, I want to do what you did on Folklore, but my way. Yeah. And those feel like promises fulfilled, if not Travis saying banger, 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 banger about every song. We know which song he was talking about now. Yes. But it's like, these are not the kind, we'll get to Wood. These are not the exact kind of bangers. There is no Shake It Off here, which I think is for the best. But the overall thesis of this album, what are you hearing as far as, is there a concept? And does it stem from the life of a showgirl as a title and as imagery?
So if you take the last song seriously, which is the title track, it's a duet with Sabrina Carpenter. It's the only, Sabrina's the only guest on this album. If you take that seriously as a concept, what I think is being sold here is, hey, in order to have such and such level of success, in order to become the true icon who is looked up to by young women, coveted by men and everybody else, you have to make some sacrifices. You have to apply makeup and wardrobe and a steely outer layer. That's what you have to do. And then inside that, you are like suffering a little bit. And then what love allows you to do is take that off, strip that down, perhaps literally, certainly metaphorically. And so to me, the album is about, it starts out with the stripped down version, and then it returns and says, this is what I'm escaping.
This is what I was doing all along.
Yes.
I was like, putting on a show for you.
Yes. So for three songs, it's like, I'm liberated. And then for nine songs, it's like, and here's what it took to get to that point.
I think that's right. To me, I'm starting to think of this as her cringe album. This is her embracing cringe. And there's the ballad here, the fifth track on the album, Eldest Daughter, which you alluded to in our intro about everyone being so punk on the internet. You know, the key line is, I'm not a bad bitch.
But I'm not a bad bitch. And this isn't savage.
This isn't savage. She's using internet speak. Which is not my favorite thing that she does lyrically, but I think kind of pulls it off here because she's really selling it. But to me, it's like, you know, I tried to be all these different kinds of people. I tried to date moody guys. Mm-hmm. I tried to date artists. And it didn't work for me. And it was still me putting on a costume. I tried to act tough, you know,
with a reputation.
And only this, only true love, and only physical intimacy like I've never known before has allowed me to shed that layer and embrace my inner cringe. And I hear that in the moments on this album that are like corny, proudly corny.
Yeah.
I hear this in the moments on this album that sound like Broadway.
Yeah.
There's some theatrical stuff, which I think plays in. But I think you're right that like Life of a Showgirl, which maybe feels like a little bit of an afterthought as a title track and a closer, is a sort of reveal. It's a credits reveal of what you were experiencing across these 12 tracks.
Also, eldest daughter, which you mentioned, and I didn't write this in my review, but it was something that was on my mind. It seems like a very obvious callback to the careful daughter of a careless man, you know? Like, and it's about what it's like to put on the show in order to survive. And even though she doesn't explicitly call back to that in the song, that's to me a signature Taylor Swift moment. It's a signature lyric. And it's her saying that thing that actually the thing that you had cheered me for, the thing that you had celebrated me for, that was a bit of a facade. That was a charade. And I'm like ready to unload it, ready to cast that aside.
You want to just go chronologically through the track list on journey? Because I do think you talked about these first three songs. That's Fate of Ophelia. Yep. That's Elizabeth Taylor. And then that's Opalite.
Yep.
And these are the I Fell in Love with Travis Kelce songs.
Yes.
The album starts.
Do you think that there's any chance that those were recorded last?
Why?
That these are thematically linked. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that the other nine songs are thematically linked, even though there are sprinkles of kind of like new love, especially on like Honey and places and like that and Wishlist. But is it possible? And I don't know what the writing process is. We're not always clued into what the writing process on the arc is.
We may hear.
Yeah.
Even by the time this episode comes out, you never know.
Yeah. But is there a chance that some of these songs, in the sense that there is a Reputation alike, there is a Fearless alike, there is a 1989 alike.
That she was sort of working in that direction as the love was blooming. I mean, on the timeline, they were already together for, we'll call it a year plus,
but then they're heading towards, you know, things become locked in after 6 months or 12 months. Maybe it changes the tenor of the songwriting. I don't know. We got to look. Someone's got to line up the dates.
I do want to just take a brief detour and say, you know, we're aligning this.
We're a pro-love podcast.
Yeah, we are.
We are a pro-love podcast. Yeah.
But we're aligning this so much with Taylor's life and story. Like, we're not really separating the art from the artist or the artist's life. And I think that that is something that Taylor has taught us to do. And I had the thought while listening to this album that she is one of the only singer-songwriters, especially that works in a diaristic but emotional mode, where I almost never, and of course, you know, we're around the same age, but I'm a straight man and she's a straight woman billionaire. You know, I'm a journalist, like we're with very different lives. Mm-hmm. But I never think about the songs as about my own situations. Mm-hmm. I only think about the songs as being about her situations. Drake,
which are entirely about my life. Every single song about my life.
Or whoever it is. Like, often songs, singer-songwriter, confessional songs are working on two levels, but
not Taylor.
Because Taylor is so much the author of her own story and for so long, and because we've been following her career so closely and tracking the way in which it aligns with real life, which, again, she has trained her critics and her fans to do, like, I can only hear it through as a reality show through her eyes. Of course, there are artistic liberties taken. Of course, there are story songs that have nothing to do with it. But like, these songs are pretty literal. You know, again, to go to Ophelia, like the first song, which is a little bit of like, it's a little moodier than you'd expect because it's her coming out of the tortured poets era. She's saying, I was only going to focus on myself. You know, I thought I'd be miserable. And you saved me. And I really like...
I might have drowned in the melancholy. I swore my loyalty to me, myself, and I right before you lit my sky up.
I might have drowned in the melancholy. I swore my loyalty to me, myself, and I right before you lit my sky up.
And I think she's doing a really clever thing here with the Hamlet reference, Ophelia... drowning, a tragic, you know, a woman who's destined to be alone because the man she loves is got his own issues
going
on.
Thing going.
I think that's what Hamlet's about, if I recall.
like Travis Kelce, we haven't really read Hamlet.
we'll ask our wives and girlfriends what Hamlet's about.
We'll get
just
back
like
to it.
Travis Kelce. Yeah. And she's doing this sort of high-low thing where she's doing a literary reference, she's doing Shakespeare, she's talking about how moody she is, and then she's like, you just really, I pledge allegiance to your vibes.
Yeah.
Like, they're awesome. Your team is so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I root for the Kansas City Chiefs here. Again, she's playing this thing where she's like, I was trying to be this sad literary girl, but you're just
they the pulled
greatest.
Her in off the bleachers.
You're just the greatest golden retriever.
Pulled her in off the bleachers. Okay, can I ask, as a sports novice, when Taylor Swift met Travis Kelce, the Kansas City Chiefs were like having what kind of season?
Like really good, really good.
Yeah. Really good.
I think they probably went on to win the Super Bowl that year.
Does,
if I have the timeline correct.
Does all of this happen if the Chiefs went like 7-9 that year? And yes, I know there's 16 games in a football season.
There's 17 games now.
7-10. Okay. If the Chiefs go 7-10 that year, do we get this album?
Probably not.
Damn.
I also love how in this song, she's talking about how he called for her on his megaphone, AKA shot his shot on his podcast, on his video podcast with his brother. Again, she's sort of like dressing up these very modern things in this like antiquated, almost fussy language. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, it's Travis Kelce, it's like, there's a little bit of humor in that. To me. And then you get,
I don't think she thinks it's funny.
I think it's funny.
Okay.
I think they appreciate the high-low mix in their relationship as evidenced by the way they, when she said, I made an esoteric album or two, and he said, it's so hot when you say big words. that's this song in a nutshell to me. And then you have Elizabeth Taylor, which again is like, this old Hollywood reference to a woman.
Let me ask you a question. Does the name Larry Fortensky mean anything to you?
Tell the people.
Do you know?
No.
So Elizabeth Taylor is married many times.
Yeah, famously.
And one of the short-lived marriages, like in the kind of like Entertainment Tonight era.
Larry Fortensky,
blue-collar worker of some kind.
Before my time. The original Kevin Federline?
I mean, on it, like, makes Kevin Federline seem like Al Pacino, or Richard Burton in this case.
Or Richard Burton, right.
Yeah, anyway, no Fortensky.
Yeah.
No Fortensky.
But it's this song, again, sort of wrapping the Travis and Taylor love story in an old Hollywood reference as opposed to a Shakespeare reference.
Yep.
Do you like these first two songs?
Yeah, I do. I like Elizabeth Taylor more. It does have a little bit of that. What's the song where she talks about the Kennedys?
Starlight from Red, talking about Bobby and Ethel's relationship.
Yes, right. It's a little bit of that. And I don't love that particular mode of Taylor. That song was one of the first where Taylor sort of like externalizes her internal narrative. It's like, it's not me. It's a character. I'm linking myself to like great love narratives and great romance, et cetera. And it always felt kind of like a little try hard to me. In the abstract, maybe I've been softened to it over the years because I didn't have that immediate reaction to this song as I did back then to the Kennedy comparisons. Also, I think Taylor's doing it. You talk about sense of humor. This is funny.
Yeah, she's
this
like,
is Taylor
oh,
being
oh,
funny.
I'm
of course,
I'm Elizabeth Taylor. I'm lucky in love.
And also, it's how you guys have been writing about me for, at this point, 15 years.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to lean in. I'm going to own it. And actually, I came out on top.
Yeah. And no, this is a trick she used also on Folklore with Great American Dynasty, where she's using a historical narrative that she's obviously like obsessed with in a, I'm hoarding nonfiction or reading Wikipedia.
Way.
Yeah. And I bought this house and like, it's actually me. But yeah, it seems like Taylor and Travis spent some time in Italy, she's calling out hotels.
That view of Portofino was on my mind when you called me at the Plaza Atenei. Ooh, oftentimes it doesn't feel so glamorous to be me.
This was I guess there's a hotel that Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor went to together. You know, all of that is here. But these feel like a false start to me, and they feel like, okay, I have to do the thesis statement of this album, which is that, my football star boyfriend saved me from being depressed.
A lonely, yes.
From being depressed and from dating artsy boys. You know who you are. both of you. All of you. But to me, things really open up with Opalite.
I mean, Opalite is like a very obvious Taylor hit. It is the song that I have found stuck in my head the most often, kind of against my will. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's my favorite song on this album, but it is incredibly catchy. It kind of reminds me, it's like these kind of broad Taylor concept, like Enchanted or something, which I don't like. But there's something incredibly effective about the structure of this song. Really, really stuck with me.
And it's in the series of Taylor color songs, whether it's red or maroon from Midnight, or you know, she loves to play with color, you know, closely linked with her various eras, and the sky going from dark to opalite again is the same as in the previous two songs of her being freed. But to me, this is like the platonic ideal of Max and Taylor together. The chorus into the bridge, into the final chorus with the sort of white soul, like a little bit of...
I mean, girl group. To me,
Some serious girl group energy, you know, a little bit as Karen, shout out to Karen Gans again, our editor said, oh, it's like Paper Rings, which is a Jack Antonoff song. There's a little bit of that girl group energy, but it's like really, really, really Max Martin to me.
You didn't think it was Fleetwood Mac?
I could see it, sure. Yeah, it's like, but it's also like, it's the Fleetwood Mac song, Thunder Only Happens When It's Raining. Yeah. You know, it's like, I see that, it definitely. But it's like the candy shop sort of like sweetness, 60s, like, but updated. And I think that that's something that like Shake It Off tries to do, but is a little cloying in my opinion. And this stays like just on the right side of cloying for me. And I agree, just like really, really, really stuck in my head.
So three songs about the relationship. One, you're sort of writing off as like, narrative transition. One is hyper theatrical and stylized, and this is the pure pop explosion, as it were.
That's how I feel launching us into this album.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I'm probably more sympathetic to Elizabeth Taylor than you, but I do agree that Opalite is the awakening on this album. To me, Elizabeth Taylor like walks up to it in a really positive way. Yep. The Fate of Ophelia feels like it's a difference between a song that's written and a song that's like expressed. There's something written about the Fate of Ophelia. Mm-hmm.
Because of the quite unwieldy literary reference.
Yes.
You know? And I do think it's a little bit of a classic Taylor mistake that Fate of Ophelia is the first single and the opening track. Like, this is the song that got a music video right out of the gate. This is the song, you know, they're going to play the video in movie theaters beginning today. Yeah. Like, that's like, it feels off to me because I think there's four or six better singles on this album.
Yes.
Potentially. And I think, you know, the people will decide ultimately, the Swifties will decide which of these become.
Which we include ourselves in. We get a vote.
Depends on the day.
Yeah. We get a vote.
Which of these songs becomes the smash? But like, to me, you could have just as easily pushed Opalite before you push Ophelia. And then you get to this stretch, tracks four.
Wait, before that, can we just shout out Austin Swift real fast?
Do you want to talk about the line?
I had a bad habit of missing lovers past. My brother used to call it eating out of the trash. Wish Austin was there for me 10 years ago.
My brain immediately went to Austin throwing his Yeezys in the trash at peak Taylor Kanye beef.
Yeah. Should have sold those. Sorry.
Eating out of the trash.
Should have sold those.
Austin, two times popping up as big cameos in Taylor's career, both times involving the trash.
great language, though.
Totally.
Hi, this is Ashley. I live in San Francisco with my boyfriend. We would love to officially share my New York Times subscription with separate logins. We both love cooking, love being in the kitchen, but I'm a 30-minute and under efficient dinner girly. I want a sheet pan meal. He is very elaborate. He wants to get into the storytelling. I want to be able to save my easy meals and check off the ones that I've completed. And I think him having his own profile would be great.
Ashley, we heard you. Introducing the New York Times Family Subscription. You get your own login and Mr. Elaborate gets his, plus room for two others. Find out more at nytimes.com/family.
But then you get this stretch from track four to track nine, mm-hmm. which to me is just like wall to wall Taylor doing what Taylor does.
Conceptual, like they're not bangers, but they're conceptual bangers.
Yes.
And each one functions in a slightly different way. Let's talk about Father Figure, which despite the George Michael reference,
a very light interpretation.
So it's like, to me, it's in the rhythm of the singing.
Only in those two words though.
Kind of in the phrase right around it, just a touch. Like, to me, it's very faint.
This is like giving Right Said Fred credit for Look What You Made Me Do.
Yes.
This is preemptive
yes.
litigation
This
defense,
is a lawyer. This is songwriting credit by lawyer.
Which we'll get to. She did it here, but not in another case, which I thought is
very more, strange.
Even more obvious, except for the fact that she's sharing a song title here with a George Michael classic.
Yes, but by the time this comes out, those credits might have changed too, the ones we're going to talk about.
Father Figure, early standout for me.
Really
I
good.
Find this song to be extremely unique in her catalog mm-hmm. sonically mm-hmm. and a way, 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 way smarter and subtler version of The Man lyrically.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is a song about mentorship or advertised mentorship.
Yes, promised.
Promised mentorship. Mm-hmm. I'll be your father figure. We're going to make it huge together. We're going to drink brown liquor together because my dick's bigger, she says. and then it has this classic Taylor turn where...
And somehow, like, not sexual. Like, that's,
not at all.
It's that's worth noting.
Yes.
Because it is about a power imbalance, but it's not about a sexualized power imbalance. At least it does not appear that way.
And the George Michael song seems to be about a sexualized power imbalance, I think. Shout out to the use of the other father figure in Baby Girl when Harris Dickinson is dancing to it for Nicole Kidman, one of the great movie scenes of in recent history. I'm noticing from your face, you haven't seen Baby Girl. Watch Baby Girl. Speaking of power imbalances, it's an okay movie. But no, and then she gets to the bridge. She's been singing, crucially, she's been singing I the whole time.
Yes.
Not you. She's singing mm-hmm. as...
She's inhabiting the character.
She's yep. inhabiting the character, the villain. Mm-hmm. And then she says, no, no, no. I'm your daddy.
I have the big dick.
And... The interpretation of this song is it's about her masters, right? It seems to be...
It's a Scott Borchetta song.
It's a Scott Borchetta song. Maybe it's a Scooter Braun song. It's saying, all you men who said you were going to make my career, like, mm-hmm. I made your career.
Yeah, it's a mafia song.
Yeah. She says you'll be sleeping with the fishes.
Yeah, it's like
Before you even know you're drowning.
It's a you thought you whacked me, and then I took you out to the parking garage, and I whacked you. And I buried you under the cement. Like, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of a violent song that way.
There's a lot of anger in the song. But I think that it is conveyed beautifully, in the melody. And I think it's like, you know, it's an overused word, but I do think, and not all the songs on this album sound like this, but I do think it's like a very mature sound for her,
mm-hmm.
Which is not something that she's always interested in doing.
Yeah, especially on this album, which I think has these deliberate callbacks to, I mean this affectionately, whinier versions of her past. Mm-hmm. This is like a fully grown, like, I have taken the measure of my enemy and I have vanquished him. This is probably the most mature song on the album. I think even more mature, actually, obviously more mature than the Love and Lust songs.
Right, which are quite juvenile, yes. Proudly, I yes. think. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about Eldest Daughter, the fifth track on this album.
Yep.
That's the ballad about how cringe she is.
Yep.
And how she's down to be cringe now that she's been freed from love. Like, anything else you wanted to say about the song? I feel like you like this song more than I do.
Yeah, the thing that I don't like about this song is I feel like the first verse and the second verse don't really go hand in hand. The second verse feels really retrospective and personal, and the first verse is kind of this abstract philosophical thing about what the internet is like.
And Twitter and comment sections.
And like what it's like to be a person who is surveilled and scrutinized online. They don't totally feel like they go hand in hand. But I do basically like it because I do like her kind of being like, I'm not a bad bit. Like, I'm not. Like, I spent actually quite a bit of time in the mid to late 2010s trying to convince you and convince myself that I am, in fact, a bad bitch. But I'm just simply not.
I'm not sure that anyone was really buying it.
It made for some great music, whether or not you bought it.
Right.
Like, to me, the sort of funny thing about Reputation is, to me, it's obviously a great album. It's probably my favorite Taylor album. It was when we did our Taylor roundup. Go watch that video. But is it credible? I'm not even sure.
Right.
But obviously not all great art has to be credible art. You can make like fantastical art that's excellent.
And there's some camp in her bad bitch
course.
Image.
Yes. And there's also some camp in her I'm not a bad bitch confession.
Right.
But I like this. I like this kind of like, it's almost like the...
Right. The exhale of feeling comfortable in your
shoulders
skin.
Down.
Yeah.
Back relaxed. Slouching a little bit, be like, I'm not a bad bit. Like, I just, do I have to keep doing this?
I give up.
Yeah. I don't have to keep doing this anymore. Yeah. Like, no one, whether you believed it or not, it's
which
over
I feel
now.
Like is a sentiment that she's tried to express over and over again since Reputation. Like, I'm not going to do that anymore. But like, maybe she didn't even fully believe it. And this time, I guess it feels more believable. You, in your review, in your written review, called out the singing on this song. Like, you think her vocals, what do you think of her vocals across the album?
I think they're pretty good. I think they're strong. I think in this middle section that we're talking about, those are the strongest things, the strongest references that she's doing. Like, Taylor is not an A-plus vocal powerhouse. It's never really been her thing. But I feel the conviction in Father Figure. I feel it in Eldest Daughter. I think she's learned how to weaponize that kind of middle range that she has. She's not going to beat you over the head with a strong vocal. But I think she's very, very present in that middle range. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the singing here is very effective. And even when she's doing the kind of coy stuff earlier in the album, she knows how to play the saccharine quality as well.
Yeah.
But she's never going to dominate you with that.
Yeah, although I was very impressed, I'd say, by the sort of outro of Father Figure when there's the key change and she's singing in falsetto. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought that was like, that was a... Speaking of conviction, like, I think that she really went there vocally. But yeah, then we get to this Fearless song, Ruin the Friendship.
Real Fearless ass song.
This is vintage Taylor. Like, this is old Taylor.
Why is this song here? Like, if you set aside the idea that there's a micro eras tour happening within the context of this album, which... I think I've made up. Maybe it's something that Taylor was trying to do. Maybe it's something Taylor and Max sat down and said, I want one of these, one of these, one of these. I don't know. We can't know, or at least we don't know right now until Taylor comes and sits here. But why is this song here? Because even if they're trying to do that, it's one thing to go, this is how I felt 3 years ago. It's another thing to go, this is how I felt 7 years ago. It's an entirely different thing to go, this is how I felt 20 years ago. What's this song doing?
I have two answers. Yeah. One I think is literal and one is thematic.
Okay.
I think this song tells the story of a missed connection with somebody when they were young, seemingly, you know, in Tennessee. She's talking about a lakeside beach. They have one of those
Abigail's
in Tennessee.
There
also. Abigail is named dropped in this song. Her longtime best friend from childhood of 15 fame. One of the great Taylor characters in that song. But I think this, and then it seems that the subject of the song passed away unexpectedly.
Potentially,
she talks about
potentially a suicide
or an accident.
Says we'll never know why.
We'll never know why.
Yeah,
she talks about how it was inconvenient for her to go visit his grave. To me, that seems like maybe it's something that happened during the Eras tour, and it moved her such that she felt like, I have to go see this through. Sort of leads me to the thematic explanation, which I think is like, it's a closing of the loop. It's like when you are finally thinking that you found your forever person, and
sort of like sandpapering down all, or like closing off all the open threads.
Yeah, and I think that if this is
that's the open thread.
It's not
Harry. It's not Maddie.
Maybe
none of those are open threads.
Maybe there are many, many, many open threads. But I think there is something that with a final love makes you think about
Taylor Lautner.
What could have been? And this is a very much like a what could have been song. It's like, I didn't want to kiss you. Maybe you had a girlfriend. Maybe I didn't want to ruin the friendship, but I should have just done it. Like, we were young. We were having a good time. We shared a moment, even if only a moment. And Taylor loves writing songs about only a moment.
Yes.
Missed connections. Again, you mentioned mm-hmm. Enchanted. Mm-hmm. That's one of those. Various others. Put them in the comments. But I think that that's here. So I think there is something about finally feeling like you're grown up that makes you want to reflect once more on formative moments in your youth.
You read it as the death in the song happened during Eras Tour.
That's a guess, just because she says it wasn't convenient for me to go and visit your grave.
Okay.
That's total guess. All right. Not trying to, you know, again, we're talking about some of these songs literally because has led us down mm-hmm. that path, but I don't know that to be the case.
No, of course.
That's just how I interpreted the lyric.
I'm open to that.
Ruin the friendship.
Now
you want to get into the real song? You want to get into the real centerpiece here?
I feel like everything we've done has sort of been warm up for this.
Even more so than talking about wood.
Yes.
what is the denouement? This is the climax. Let's just play a little bit of Actually Romantic.
I heard you call me boring Barbie when the Cokes got you brave. High fived my ex and then you said you're glad he ghosted me.
I didn't realize pop stars did coke. Is that true? Unbelievable.
Scandalized.
Yeah. Taylor's going for the jugular here.
Mm-hmm. Is it better than revenge?
Is it better than revenge?
Is it meaner than better than revenge?
You can write off better than revenge. You can write that off as petulance.
Sour grapes.
Yeah. You can write it off as childish.
Yeah.
This is as considered as father figure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is as savage mm-hmm. as that. I think it's almost as if she started the album writing process with a list of enemies and said, I got to have one for each of these people. Now,
the Philadelphia Eagles, enemy number one.
which is the song about the Philadelphia Eagles.
That's going to be a whole album.
Sorry. Who's this about?
We've been debating.
We have been debating.
This is
the popular read. I have an unpopular read.
I feel the need to caveat, which is like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it matters. What are you talking about?
But
it obviously matters.
But this is the person who in their old lyric books used to capitalize letters in the lyrics to tell you who the song was about.
Yes. Do we have the lyric book?
It's on the internet.
Is it?
I don't have it in my possession.
Oh, okay. What is it?
She doesn't do the capital letters thing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it.
This was back in the day.
Yeah, no. I thought you were saying she did it on this one.
The internet has decided this song is about Charlie XCX. Charlie XCX had a song.
Who's that?
Charlie XCX had a song on her last album, So I've Been Told, called Sympathy is a Knife from Brat, about how Taylor Swift made her feel bad about herself.
Don't want to see a backstage of my boyfriend's show. Fingers crossed behind my back. I hope they break up because
quick backstory. Charlie just married one of the guys from the 1975. Taylor.
Not the guy who Taylor Swift Taylor dated in the 1975.
Matt Healy from the 1975. She says in the song, basically, like, I hope you guys break up soon because I don't want to see you because you make me feel bad about myself because I could never be you. Sympathy is a Knife, not a mean song.
No, you know,
for an insecure song.
Yeah, for all the sort of like dragging that maybe we've done of Charlie on podcast over the years, I don't find that. I find that to be maybe one of the better songs in her catalog. Like, to me, it's a thoughtful song. It's a song for a person who always puts forth this kind
it's
of like
acting like a thoughtful song.
Well, okay, but for a person who always puts forth this kind of like bold, fearless, like I'm out here, I'm stomping, I'm just taking in, indulging hedonism of life. To take this moment and say, and all these people around me make me feel insecure.
I think that's what people like about Brat, is that sort of brashness cut with the girl so confusing, sympathy is a nice stuff.
Is that what people like about Brat?
Beats me. Can I just say,
no,
actually romantic? No, I think you might agree with this. Yeah, like, I don't want to fight, but if we're in the spirit of fighting, like, actually romantic is better than anything on Brat put together.
Yeah, who are you going to fight with? No one in this room.
I'm just like, this song is so potent.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not about Charlie XCX.
Yeah.
Apologies for dragging Brat if it's not about Charlie XCX.
So, okay. If you are to be purely like, have pure fealty to the lyrics, I can see where this goes in the Charlie direction.
She called me boring Barbie when the Coke made her brave.
Yeah, like that.
I don't, you know,
if I had to guess.
Allegedly.
Like, it's not like Zara Larsson, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like Rita Ora.
You're really dragging some people into this that, you know.
To
be clear, we do know it's about a songwriter because she says, you wrote a song about how seeing me makes you sick.
Yes.
That's an ungenerous read of Sympathy is a Knife.
Yes.
I don't know if there are other Charlie songs allegedly about Taylor.
I don't think so. Not to my knowledge. I listened to the guitars on this song.
Okay.
At the chorus, and especially in the closing 15 or 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. I listened to those guitars, and I can only hear one thing, and that is the oeuvre of Olivia Rodrigo.
You mean two albums of Olivia Rodrigo?
That is an oeuvre in modern times. That is a modern oeuvre. Olivia Rodrigo
having two albums. She's just very young.
Will you stop pushing back? It's an oof. For Christ's sakes, it's an oof. It's an oof. When I hear that, I think about Olivia Rodrigo as the lost daughter of Taylor Swift. And whatever struggle they had about songwriting credit on the first Olivia album, Olivia clearly coming into the game spiritually indebted to Taylor,
explicitly
a fan of,
so. Yes,
said as much, and also had a couple of songs that very specifically call back to earlier Taylor Swift songs. There was some tension about credits. I don't know if someone didn't send flowers to the other person on the right day, or if some lawyer said something.
You didn't tweet my album.
Yeah, you didn't. Literally, you didn't tweet my album. Like, someone's lawyer said something a little too aggressively to the other person's lawyer. I don't know why. I don't know what happened, but Taylor chose Sabrina Carpenter. Ultimately, Taylor chose Sabrina Carpenter.
And not Olivia, to pit women against each other.
I would never do that. But ultimately, Taylor did not choose Olivia.
Olivia did not choose Taylor, or you know.
There's
both.
A universe where Olivia is doing like 20 dates on Eras Tour. Yeah. That did not happen. Mm-hmm. And so I hear those guitars, and you know, I wrote recently about Dear John and Taylor sort of like adopting a mode.
Our favorite diss track.
Our favorite diss track of all time. Taylor adopting a mode of an enemy in order to take them down. Did this with Mattie Healy in the 1975, also on Poets. I heard those guitars and I said, huh, I feel like I know who that's aimed at. Now, look, the internet is disagreeing with me. I'm open to being wrong. It's possible it's composite.
That's a theory of mine. I think it's possible it could be first verse about one person, second verse about another person.
Here's the thing
about... could just be like, don't step to me. Like, I hear you, all of you singers who are jealous of my Eras Tour and my billions and my, you know... Oof.
Like a toy chihuahua barking at me from a tiny purse. That's how much it hurts.
It could be about anyone like, who's ever talked shit about Taylor
didn't
Swift.
Didn't Cardi just tweet that about Nicki earlier today?
I did have this thought, which is this song is about how hating someone so much and talking about them and obsessing over them constantly is a bit homoerotic. And there were tweets throughout the week from observers of the Cardi B Nicki beef saying, like, this is bordering on the homoerotic.
Yes, this is.
And if I
mean,
worked,
it's not bordering on. I mean, in this song, it's not bordering.
No, I'm saying the Nicki
yes,
Cardi
no,
part.
No, this song though.
No, and I'm just saying, if I worked for Cardi B, I would say, you're waking up and you're posting a video of yourself dancing to Actually Romantic.
I thought you were going to say putting a 16 on this.
That too.
Put Let's a 16. Go. Free idea. Cardi, put a 16 on Actually Romantic.
Let's go.
Okay. So there is this. We are now in the Taylor is aroused section of this album. Sorry.
I mean, yeah.
Apologies.
The final lyric of the bridge of Actually Romantic stopped me in my tracks.
Oh, I thought you were just going to say what it is.
No.
Or are you just going to play
it? I can't. I'll blush.
I won't. Taylor says, it's kind of making me wet.
Can we just skip ahead and talk about wood?
Yeah, the hell with wish list. When I was thinking about how to write the intro for my review, it was challenging to not think of Actually Romantic, not in Congress with wood. I blushed when I heard wood. I assume a lot of people blushed when they heard wood. I'm going to assume everybody in this room.
You think Travis Kelce blushed?
He was already red. Can't blush. I think what I said in my review is wood is about a reliable lover. Mm-hmm. Look, we're just two.
You know what else is reliable?
You know what? We're just two grown men here talking about a song about Travis Kelce.
You know what else is reliable? A redwood tree.
Play the song.
Redwood tree, it ain't hard to see. His love was the key that opened my thighs. Girls, I don't need to catch the bouquet to know a hard rock is on the way.
Taylor would like you to know that she's doing fine.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway from this, is she's doing great.
Yeah.
She's doing great.
She's feeling... what's up with those guitars? The Jackson 5?
Like, literally Jackson 5. Like, that's... Okay, we're going to step back from blushing.
I had to change the subject.
Okay, fine. Do Max Martin and Shellback and Taylor Swift think that no one has ever heard I Want You Back by the Jackson 5 before? Do they think that? Have we entered such an ahistorical era that no person has ever heard that song? It seems so blatantly a copy.
Yeah.
I went back to listen to it. There is like a secondary.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. There's like a secondary bass line in the Jackson 5 that like kind of like cuts it a little bit, but basically the rhythm of the guitar is the same.
Yep.
Very strange. Uncredited. Maybe again by tomorrow, credited.
Yes. I have two songs that I think this track is a little bit in dialogue with. One, again, these people love wordplay. I think I Wish You Would from 1989, which is a Jack Antonoff song, not a Max Martin song, but I think there's something in common here with the flow.
Yeah.
I don't know if she knows that.
And Kaya's My Neck, My Back.
Similar. Speaking of wordplay, two Britney Spears songs, If You Seek Amy and Three, both Max Martin productions, both just innuendo. If You Seek Amy, get it?
Okay, so Cardi should remix Actually Romantic, Sexy Red.
On wood. After what Sexy Red said on the Justin Bieber album, I don't know that
Larry make the call.
I don't know that I think I might faint if Sexy Red raps on this.
These two songs that we've been talking about, what do they tell you about where Taylor is in her life and in her willingness to be expressive publicly? Because I think one of the things that Taylor has taught us, you talked about Taylor has taught us to treat songwriting as autobiographical and to look for the kind of Easter eggs that are about her actual life. The other thing that Taylor taught us over the years is she has slow walked all these kind of like hallmarks of adulthood in her songwriting, yeah. whether it's cursing or talking about sex,
drinking.
These are all things that like
drugs
have been meted out in very, very slow and deliberate fashion over the years.
Seemingly long after they would have happened for most people that age. Like she was quite conservative about it.
And then this album is just like, the hell with all that. We're going in. What is she trying to tell us?
She's trying to tell us, I played 149 shows for your kids. Like, cover their ears. Cover their ears if they need if they can't hear this stuff. You know, I think it's like, what am I going to do? I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be sooner than later 40 years old.
What's that like?
No idea. Yeah, to be nearing your 40s.
Yeah, yeah, no idea.
It's tough. but I, you know, at the same time, like, there's something playful and juvenile about these
being
songs.
Like, yeah. And being like,
yeah. So it's like, it's just, that's who she is. Like, I think that's who she is. I think she's been famous since she was a teenager. She likes her silly sense of humor. She likes her wordplay. She has not felt unleashed to be able to use it to her. Like, I bet you she sends a lot of really funny, dirty text to her group chat. You know what I mean? Like,
do you think that?
Yeah, I think her sense of humor is probably more rated R than her music has been in the past, which is not a high bar. Her music is rated PG-13.
If anybody's in a Taylor group chat and watching this,
let us know. How much does she curse?
Yeah, which one? No. Yeah.
How much innuendo
off
is
off the record? Your anonymity will be protected. I promise.
Or that. Taylor, text us.
Yeah.
You have our numbers, I'm sure, somehow.
Somewhere. I don't want to say that's the end of the album. There are three additional songs.
Yeah.
Let's kind of collapse the three songs into a one-on-one snack segment, which we haven't done. I feel like the last few episodes when we've had snacks, we're looking at our guests and we're just like, what do they like?
Yeah.
What do they want? Yep. You know what? Today's about us.
Every episode of Popcast.
That's right.
Ends with a snack review.
That's right.
Our editor working very hard to turn this episode around as quickly as possible to please our listeners and the algorithm.
And also Sophie.
And also Sophie, our producer. We got banana planks and we've got strawberry planks.
What is the company that makes these?
This is Uncle Al's.
All right, so I bought these in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I was down there for the Theo Von tour. I went to a barbecue restaurant on the way to the airport. Everybody had recommended to me just out of the center of Oxford, Mississippi. This was on the snack rack. I'd never seen Uncle Al's. I don't know if it's regional. I don't know anything about it. There were multiple flavors. I just bought those two because they were the ones that I thought I would most like. They're giving...
Let's see. Let's try them and Hostess. Then we'll know. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're made in Alabama.
Oh, they're local?
They're from Alabama, made in the USA.
Great news.
Proudly, according to the label. May be produced with genetic engineering. So, John, why don't you start with the strawberry and I'll start with the banana. And we can talk about canceled honey and the closer, which we've already discussed a little bit.
All right. So canceled is probably my least favorite song on this album.
I agree.
It's just so Reputation coded.
Yeah.
And Reputation was the right album for the Reputation moment. Yeah. This is like a protest to me. What's this about? Also, you just spent six songs ago, all your kind of vocal energy being like, I'm not a bad bitch. And now you're like, I only hang with bad bitches. Right. Like, if you're not a bad bitch, I don't get down with you.
I think the concept of cancellation has evolved so rapidly in the last days, weeks, months, and year. Like, I don't want to hear a song about cancellation, no matter where the stance is. And I don't quite grasp what her stance is in this song. It doesn't feel like a direct song. It doesn't land for me.
What do you think it's about?
Something to do with Blake Lively, maybe. Blake Lively's in this lawsuit. Taylor Swift has been roped into it. Is she saying I stand by you? I'm not really sure. I like my friends canceled. That's the lyric.
Does she?
I don't know.
Does that mean she likes Kanye?
Definitely not.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Is this like a Pop-Tart with no filling?
Yeah.
Is that what this is? Smells fake in a nice way.
I don't. Yeah. I'll switch.
Definitely stale.
Yeah.
Definitely tastes like a cookie Like I'm eating a cookie and banana Laffy Taffy at the same time, which I would never do. Wow. That is extremely chemically.
Like this is not a god, like this no. is not a god color.
No. this is not a beer in nature.
No. All right.
It's got nothing to do with a strawberry. It's genetically produced.
Oh, I didn't even realize the frosting was banana colored as well.
Oh yeah. Is that what a banana looks like to you?
Oh. I don't hate these.
You like the banana? All right. I'm gonna take a bite of the strawberry. You like honey?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like people used to call me sweetheart and baby when they were patronizing me, when they were talking down to me. Anyone called me sweetheart, it was passive aggressive. At the bar and the bitch was telling me to back off because a minute looked at me wrong. And now you call me honey and baby because you love me.
Mm. Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah.
It's a little slight musically, yeah. I think.
I think that's fair. The only thing to me that really stuck with me about Honey is it feels like New Year's Day to me.
Taylor Swift song.
Taylor, yes.
Not the holiday.
Sorry. Yes. Taylor's New Year's Day, which is the kind of pensive ballad about falling in love at the end of Lover. Yeah. This feels like maybe like a tiny bit up-tempo, a little bit more taut, but it recalls that spaciousness. And I thought maybe it's a tiny bit of a callback to that.
Similar piano line.
Yeah.
Yeah, this last stretch of the album, maybe I just need more time with it. It feels a little bit like an anticlimax, especially after, again, I think this middle stretch is really, really, really strong, especially for modern day Taylor. I like the song. It's perfect. It's perfectly pleasant, but it doesn't feel meaningful or weighty essential to me. Yeah, yeah.
What really doesn't feel essential to me is the title track, which does feel like an afterthought. I don't know why Sabrina's on this, except to sort of like prove a point to Olivia.
Or anyone else.
Or Chapel. Yeah,
who missed out. I think she sounds good on it. I think they sound a little similar.
They sound very similar. I texted you earlier to be like, this one line, who's singing this particular line.
Yeah. I think it's a good song. I just don't know. Other than the explanation we gave earlier, which is this sort of like, this is the facade I was dealing with. And let me just wrap it up in a story song. It has a little country energy, right? Like the lyrics.
It's very country. Yeah, I feel about this song, I think, the way that you feel about The Fate of Ophelia, which is like, it feels very written and it feels very much like, I'm here to prove it. Like,
it's overdetermined.
Yes, exactly. It's overdetermined. I'm here to like tell this story. These
cookies are horrendous.
Uncle Al, I'm going to be honest. I like the banana one. Is that the one that wasn't stale?
I thought they were both quite stale. Oh, expired.
Sorry.
It might be expired.
What does it say on the back?
No, banana doesn't expire until Halloween.
Oh, well, that's why it's delicious.
We're going to give it to the kids. The trick-or-treaters in your neighborhood are about to get Uncle Al's banana cookie.
All right. This is not an elegant cookie. The sort of the mealiness, the kind of like soft crumble of the thing.
Yeah.
It's not great. Yeah. I'm going to give the banana a 6. I'm going to give the strawberry a 2.
Yeah, these are twos. These are strong twos.
Both twos?
These are firm twos.
With my apologies to Uncle Al.
Yeah, like I like the spirit.
I love a regional cookie.
I love the spirit of Uncle Al.
I love a regional cookie.
Not working for me.
So sorry.
Bless your heart, Uncle Al.
Yeah.
I'm calling you honey, you know. Before we go, we're doing an instant reaction. This could change. This could change next week when maybe we do another Taylor Swift episode. In fact, send us your questions for that.
100%.
If you have questions about Taylor Swift, we're going to do a Taylor-specific mailbag.
With the whole crew. With the whole crew. Full pop crew.
John Perellis, Karen Gans,
Lindsay Zolads,
Ben Cesario. We're going in.
Yeah.
Next week, it's Life of a Showgirl season. Send us your questions about Taylor, about this album, about her career arc. But as we fade out, where are you putting this in your Taylor rankings right now as we speak? It doesn't have to be exact, but roughly. Because to me, I think definitely better than the last two,
which are two
of my least favorite Taylor albums. I like a lot of Taylor albums. I like a lot of Taylor albums a lot.
In the middle third.
Yeah, that
like sounds if it's, right. Where are we, 12 albums for Taylor?
Yeah.
Four. I think it's in the middle four.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe dead in the middle to the top of the middle four.
Yeah.
It's not better than Reputation. It's not better than 1989. It's not better than Speak Now. Like, it's definitely, you know.
I'm going to go ahead and say it's better than 1989 for me early on. I'm on record as a 1989 skeptic. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a more effective version of Max and Taylor together because it's both of them doing what they're best at.
I feel like I still, there's something I'm missing. I'm waiting for the explosion on this album. The explosion never comes. Doesn't mean I don't like it. Doesn't mean it's not good. But I still feel like there's something that's like left unfinished. What do you guys think? Get in the comments, get in our emails. Maybe don't get in our DMs.
Like and subscribe to
Popcast. Like and subscribe. Every episode of Popcast is at youtube.com/popcast. We're available on audio and all audio platforms on Instagram and TikTok at Popcast. We'll be back next week with round two audio episode with the whole crew. Credits and link in bio. We'll be back next week.